Hello everybody and welcome back to the AntPod. This is now episode 22 and today it's a special crew. We have two backup hosts on the line and we also have Rich from Ant Antics. And let's just start with you, Rich. Hello, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm doing good. The end of a good day.
Oh, well, indeed it is for me as well, so that's two. And the reason we have Rich on today is because we are talking about being an ant shop selling ants. So a few weeks ago, we talked with Wakushi about how it is to run an ant store selling ant nests. And today we're talking about selling ants themselves. And Rich, can you just explain a little bit of what you're doing?
I'm selling ants. I'm trying to make a difference. We're trying to change the way things are done and create some structure into what seemed a very hectic community a few years ago, especially on the storefront. So we're trying to make some waves and do things a little differently.
Yeah, I think you've definitely changed the market forever. Because what is really unique, one of the things that is really unique is the way you do your packaging. And now all the other companies are starting to upgrade their versions of the packages to kind of go the same style as you. And I think it's really amazing how you've changed the hobby so much with just changing the packages. Hang on, you texted me, you just confused me. We also have two extra hosts. Yeah, just go with a little behind the scenes with the podcast right here. Everything was working very well until we had to start the recording, and then everything just went wrong, and it completely threw me off track. But we also have two extra hosts today. We have Lynn from last week, and we have Antimatters. And yeah, let's just say hello to Antimatters. It's been a while since you've been here. How are you doing, Antimatters?
Really good, thanks. Yeah, the ants are all doing well as well, so can't complain there. But yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and actually, now that I think about it, you actually sell your Tetramerium bicarinatum because you have quite a big colony.
Yeah, I do sell a few of those. I've only just kind of got into the market though. So yeah, still learning the ropes.
Are you thinking of taking a step further, or is it just to get rid of the top part of the Tetrameriums?
Well, at the minute, I would like to get some more ants, but then again, it's like, I don't want to get ants that are already available, if you get what I mean. So I'm keeping my eye out for some, Lassius neoniger at the minute, but that's about it, really.
Okay, so you're not thinking any way of opening a store or anything, just a casual ankeeper?
Well, not for more ants, anyway. I've got my little shop with nests, but I think I'll stick with Tetramerium bicarinatum for now.
That's very true. Yeah, you are designing some 3D printing products in there. What about you, Lynn? Have you ever thought of opening a store or anything, or are you just the other end, being the buyer all the time?
Well, I have been like importing and exporting from Asia and then to Germany and France, but in the bigger scale, I think it's too much for me.
Okay, can you just explain a little bit about that? Importing and exporting?
Well, like sometimes, sometimes every year, of course, the nuptial flights happen, Nico Brancis. And then it's like a fight with the Asian sellers who gets the most ants out the quickest. And German shops often have some issues with the permits, like importing and stuff like that, because Germany is very strict on what goes inside their borders. But the Netherlands is a little bit more simpler. So the ants go to me, and when they come to me, I take care of them, and then they move further to Germany.
That's a nice way of saying you're bypassing the system.
Pretty much.
Yeah, that's also, of course, I've talked quite a lot with you, Rich. We've become quite good friends in real life, ant life. And I've started to find out there's a lot more behind just receiving ants from across the globe and taking care of them. Can you try to explain a little bit of the process if you are getting ants from Lynn? What do you do once you receive the ants? Do you just sell them straight away, or what happens?
Well, the initial problem you have is getting the ants, and the hardest thing is lining up ways to do that legitimately. Once you've found a courier that will transport live animals, you then need to get the appropriate permits. As Lynn said, it's easier to get the permits in her country, and it's perfectly legal to cross border trade within the European Union. So if she can get them in easier, then moving them to Germany is just a very simple process. Whereas getting them into Germany first off would be quite difficult. Whereas, you know, clearly Lynn is doing it legitimately. And, you know, there's two kinds of seller, isn't there? There's the seller that just buys ants and hopes for the best, and then there's the seller that does it properly. But the problem is doing it properly is very expensive. Everything that comes into the country, into the UK, I can't speak for other countries, has to go straight to customs, and the boxes get opened and checked, and they check the paperwork is in there, and they check what you've said you'll be bringing in is actually what you're bringing in, and then it can be forwarded to you. And they charge you about £350 for the privilege. So your imports have to be big enough that you can absorb that cost among the ants. But then once they get to us, it doesn't end, does it? Because everything that goes into our store needs to go into quarantine. So we need to move it into a fresh tube, and then we need to put it into a quarantine, and then we need to check on it. And now, typically our quarantine is between 7 and 14 days between species. But receiving an order from wherever we're getting the order is a good full day's work for me and Sam, just to process it, bring it into stock, and deal with it, you know?
Yeah, and that's something I, again, coming more and more behind the scenes, that I really started realizing. Whenever I bought ants before, they were out of stock, and then they were in stock, and then I could get them. But there's this whole thing going on behind the scenes. So when you are buying ants, are you often buying one colony or 10 colonies or 100 colonies, or how does it all work?
It depends who and what species. Typically, we're spending between 5,000 and 7,000 euros a month in stock. And so that will be divided up between all of our sellers all over the world. Wow. Yeah, it depends. We put maybe 3,500 euros into Asia alone every month. So I don't know how that compares to other stores. I don't know whether that's a lot or whether it's nothing, or whether it's big or small. I don't know. I only know what we bring in. But yeah, some things, if it's a high risk, like we've got a new trade route that's opened up with Australia, and we thought we'd chance some bull ants, and the order arrived 2 days ago and the bull ants didn't make it, and then you kiss goodbye to thousands. So sometimes it pays off, sometimes it doesn't. But I've kind of forgotten your question and gone off on a tangent, so I'll let you bring it back.
No, I mean, that's what we love. That's what I love, at least, when we just go different directions. But no, what I initially asked was, how many ants do you normally receive in such a package?
In a shipment?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Is it like 5, 10, 100, 1,000?
In the Asia order that just arrived, there is maybe 150 tubes of various things, maybe 200.
Wow.
And they range from like colonies to single queens or whatever. But, you know, like from Asia, we have an order come in every 14 days. So every 2 weeks we have something coming in from there.
Yeah, I was about to ask, how often do you receive orders then? So every 2 weeks from Asia, is that...
Pretty much every week on a Wednesday, and a Thursday, there's something coming in from somewhere.
Pretty much. Nice.
Every 2 or 3 weeks we have an order coming in from Poland, maybe once a month from Spain.
How does it work with hibernation? And because the Australian species, I'm guessing that they are starting to fly now, if I'm not wrong.
So yeah,
do you get ants year around then?
Yeah, so as they fly, well, we've only just started with Australia. It's a brand new trade route that we've opened. And we've only just started, but I assume that just as they fly year round, we'll be taking deliveries like we do with everyone else, you know.
Yeah. That's really interesting. Again, that's just some of the things you don't really notice when you just go to a website and just press order. But we have, as we always try to do, asked the viewers what they thought of, have they ever thought of opening an Ant store? And 8% surprisingly said, I have an Ant store.
Oh,
And
wow.
that's 8% of 200 people, so
16
math.
people have an ant store. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't know if that says something about my subscribers or what is it. Either way, 22% says they would like to order an Ant store, open an Ant store, and 47% says no, I just want to buy ants, and 24% says maybe in the future. So I don't know if it's just me, but after I saw Aesthetic start his Ant store, I feel like a lot of other people started thinking, "Hey, maybe you can just do it." He did the whole 3D printing, and then I felt like the whole hobby also joined the 3D printing. I don't know if it was just me opening my eyes, but I feel Aesthetic have definitely made a way to show other people how, I don't want to say easy, but how simple it may be to enter the world of being a shop.
I should imagine it would be difficult. It wasn't difficult to start. I mean, nowadays anyone can make a website. Anyone can source some stock to sell. Where the difficulty for me comes, there's two fundamental things that I've done wrong. The first thing is I've become a legitimate entity. So we're a business. We're insured. We pay corporation tax. We pay PAYE and National Insurance. We have staff. We have a business property, and we pay our rates on that as well. Our business rates, like the taxes that the councils charge. So we've got all of this system in place that unfortunately it means that we have to make minimum amounts of money to be able to exist, because if the bid levy guy comes in at the end of the month and we haven't got the direct debit to pay him, he isn't going to care if it's a quiet month. Now, a lot of people will frown upon that, but really, real innovation happens when everything's on the line and you've got everything to lose. So if Ant Antics doesn't make sales, they're coming for my house. And I think it's really important that everything is there. I'm all in. I'm invested 100%. And that means that I'm always going to be thinking of something new and something different and trying to improve things to stay one step ahead of everybody else. And that brings me on to the second problem. The second problem is that I've opened a business in something I love. That's categorically the worst thing anyone can do. You should never open a business because you love what you do. You use a business to generate money to spend on what you love doing. And I've done it backwards. I've opened up a business that's my hobby. And I love ants and I love working with them every day. But because I'm emotionally connected to every queen that I have, it creates some judgment call problems that shouldn't really be made sometimes. And yeah, that's the second problem. I shouldn't have started a business in the thing I love doing.
Actually some really good insights, especially the first thing you said where you have a lot more on the line. I feel
Okay,
like it's,
everything's on the line. Everything.
yeah, I feel it's a lot the same with as I'm just sitting here making videos once in a while to put out on YouTube, but you often see these YouTubers just go all out to drop out of their education and go all in, and that just gives they need to do much extra to stand out from all of the rest, which builds a nice name around them, or sometimes enough, and sometimes they fail. But it's definitely an interesting way of looking at it. I've never thought of that.
Nobody ever got anywhere by not taking a risk. So I could have kept it how it was in the early stages, and we could have just had a nice piece of tissue paper in the box, and we could have carried on doing it with me in my home office, keeping the ants in the garage. But I very quickly decided that that wasn't the route that I wanted for ant antics. I wanted something above board. I wanted it. When I first got into this game, everything felt so seedy. It felt so backstreet, almost like you're doing something wrong, you know, with all these websites out there that you can't phone anyone. You don't know where they are. There's Gmails as their email addresses. You know, there's, if you go into distance selling regulations in the UK, pretty much every website I ever looked at was breaking the law with distance selling regulations by not having information on the site that should be. And I thought I just wanted to do it properly. And of course, there's only a handful of companies that are doing it properly. You know, I can count them on one hand, the amount of people I know of that are doing it properly. But sadly, with it means that we're never going to be able to compete with bedroom sellers. So the only way that we can stand out is by trying to have more stock from more places. And I know we're not the cheapest, and I'll never pretend to be the cheapest for what we sell. But I like to think you get a quality queen, you know what you're getting, and you get it done right, you know. And yeah, I'm sure there's plenty of people out there that get upset because we might charge this and they can wholesale them for that. But a lot of people forget, you might pay a fifth of the price wholesale, you know, if you went yourself to Asia. But you've got to ship it and you've got to take the risk, and chances are it's going to be an illegal import. And we absorb all of that risk, and we pay staff to care for these queens. Somebody I fell out with not so long ago was boasting that they were selling a colony for, let's say, £20 as a ballpark figure. And for me to grow that colony would have taken me 18 months. And I would have had, even if we cared for that colony 5 minutes once a week, over that period of time, we'd have had like £46 worth of care that have gone into it in staff wages. So we're faced with a whole new array of problems, is the point I'm getting at. So, but I think it needed to happen to stand out.
It is some really, really amazing inside knowledge right here.
Of course, we got AntCon, right? And that's something completely different, funded by the people who, you know, everybody that supports us and buys from us, they're paying for AntCon. We made a massive loss on it last year. It's being paid for by people, and it's that innovation that we're trying to give back. And we have, at the last count, I think we've got 83 colonies out in schools all over the county that we're in. We provide free ants to schools, and in return we get the kids wanting and they buy ants, and it does generate money back. But we're trying to invest and we're trying to do things different.
Yeah, Rich, you're making me sit here and smile. I do always love hearing how much things you don't see of just going to a website and just press order and then get an ant colony and look the other way. It's insane how much behind the scenes you get. You said you started in your garage, so how old is Ant Antics today? Rough estimate.
I think we're coming up to 3.
All right.
We'll be 3 in the spring.
That's crazy. I've been in the hobby for longer than you have been in the shop. That's insane.
Yeah, I know, right?
Oh, that's quite crazy. I didn't even know that. I have a question from Vecto. A very good question I actually thought of myself. She asked, how do you manage to store? How do you store and manage all the ant colonies so you don't mix them up?
We use very, very simple Braplast tubs. And in the Braplast tub, we line it with acoustic foam, you know, the spiky ridge stuff. Yeah. And then everything gets put into its own box in its tubes. Obviously, that doesn't work with a lot of things like Tetrapanera and Harpignathos and all of those kinds of things. Yellow Crazies, all of that kind of stuff needs its own individual tubs and tubes. But for the most part, if it can be stored in a test tube, it's in its own tub within a Viv that's temperature controlled.
So, but how do you then have stickers saying what species is inside, or is it only one species inside the tub, or?
We used to, when it was just Sam and I, we never used to label tubs at all. Because you take a look and you just know what species was in there, because you know every species you stock inside out. But since we've got Matt, since Matt joined the team, it dawned on us that new people need a little bit of help to learn. It takes time. So now everything has a label on it. Every tub has a label with what species is inside.
And have you ever mixed up the species then, or have it just been under control?
Yeah, I have a few times. The thing that I mix up all the time is Paludula and Caspitum. So Fidole Paludula and Tetramorin Caspitum, the queens to me look pretty identical, and I've never got my glasses. And there's a way you can tell by the gap between the gaster and the thorax that makes it more obvious. But I mix them up all the time. But I've got a Sam with young 19-year-old's eyesight to fix it. Only when they're fresh queens. Once there's workers, I'm fine. Just as fresh queens.
Yeah, I was about to say, because the workers are very different, right?
When they're fresh queens, I make mistakes. And sellers, you know, when they're importing stuff, we're lucky because it has to go to customs. It all has to be blocked and it has to be labelled so that customs say, oh, you're bringing in 100 tubes of that. I count 100 tubes. They all look the same. Brilliant. But if they didn't do that, so especially with new species, I'd find it pretty difficult.
Yeah, I'm guessing you're seeing a lot of different species at the store. There's another question I've also always wondered. Makasa, I never know how to pronounce the name, asked, what happens if you don't manage to sell some colonies, if they just get large and costly? Do you just put the price down, or what happens if you don't sell them?
This is a tough one, see. And obviously, I'm only speaking as a business, so I'm not your typical ant store. I don't know what a typical ant store would do. As a business, we have to weigh up the cost with everything. So we have to weigh up the investment we make to the return we're going to get, and that can never fall into a negative balance, ever. Because if you do that, you're losing money. So you do have to weigh that up. But with clever ordering, it never happens. We order little and often. So that's why we're bringing orders every 14 days, because we're never overstocking on stuff, because we never need to. And if a colony does start growing big, it's usually because we want it as a display colony, so we've kept it for that reason. Or we can sell them to other stores. We can ship them back out, we can donate them to as displays for the schools and things like that. But at the moment, it's never happened. I'd love to have some big colonies to sell, but they sell out too fast.
I guess it's a lot like milk. You buy, and before it goes bad, you've
oils. Yeah.
Yeah. You buy small portions to make sure you don't get too much.
Yeah, that's what we do. We just buy enough. If we know we're gonna sell 10 queens on average, for a given month, we'll order 10, and then if we sell out, they can wait till the next order. So I'd rather run out of stock of things more regularly, and of course it makes good sense to run out of stock, doesn't it, because it creates demand for things.
Businessman.
I'm the wrong person for a podcast, aren't I? Because although I love ants, I love them. You know, this is my hobby. This is everything I want to do. And I absolutely want to give everything I have to this hobby and this industry. At the same time, I am a businessman. And, you know, I'm kind of always going to be slightly vested.
No, I mean, it makes sense. Like we discussed before, you've gone all in, and that's just, there's another stake at risk. And it's not the bed. I like how you called them bedroom sellers. That's a term I haven't heard before.
I don't mean that derogatory.
No.
I don't mean that as like a negative thing, and I don't want that to come across that's my way of like devaluing someone, because it certainly isn't. Because, you know, this country is built on people that on small sellers and independents, and I love the innovation and the way that they work, and you know, and the majority of them are buying stock from us. You know, certainly a lot of them buy stock from us. But yeah, it's that I think there is two like different kinds of business within the sector. And you know, you in the same way walking down your street, you've got your convenience stores, and then you've got your massive supermarket chains. And I'm certainly not saying I'm the massive supermarket chain in the ant world, but what I'm saying is that we do things a little bit differently. We have a business, we have a shop, we have a place people can go and see the ants and buy them and choose the queens they want. So our overheads are always going to be a little bit different.
Yeah, again, it's just different. You're on a different level than... You have some different stakes at risk. So it makes sense you have gone a different route.
I don't mean we earn any more money because we're spending it all on the wrong stuff.
Yeah, now you're getting this fancy box with a colony inside that you could...
I had to wallpaper the bloody... I don't know if we can say things like this, but yeah, I had to wallpaper the wall through reception the other day, and... eye-watering amount of money got spent on wallpaper, and I was like, that would have bought me 20 queens.
But I think Lynn, if you're still here, Lynn, you're of course from the country where everything is a lot easier to import. How many different ant stores do you have just in the Netherlands? Because I feel like there's like around 5-10 big English stores in Europe, but it seems as every time I talk with you, you list another store and this store and that store, and you have so many small independent stores.
Well, if we look at the Netherlands, let me get all my tabs open because I'm still everything off my PC. Let's see, we have in the Netherlands, we have Ant Heap, we have Quality Ants, we have Aesthetic Ants, we have Mieren Specialist, which is Ant Specialist translated. We have Mieren Nederland, so Ant Holland or Ant Netherlands. And then we have the infamous Ant Kingdom. Is it Ant Kingdom? In Dutch, it's Mierenboerderij.
There's a store called that at least.
Yeah, Ant's it translates to Ant Kingdom is like the. Yeah, it is Ant Kingdom actually. Found it. So that's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and I think I'm not sure if we have. Well, and Flanders is Belgium, so that doesn't count as Netherlands. Yeah, we have a bunch of small ones.
Yeah, and I just want to say we have zero stores in Denmark, as far as I'm aware. So yeah, definitely different areas with a lot of. There must be so much competition then in the Netherlands compared to. I don't know if I look at the UK, of course. In the UK, there's like 8 or 9 big stores that I know of, at least. I don't know who you.
Competition is rife here. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing. What do you look at competition? Do you look at other stores and look at what they have, and then you copy them, or how does it work with getting species in?
Carry on, Lynn.
Can you say again or what? Got distracted.
I'm losing all that. I'm falling out now.
Every day on my task sheet at 10 a.m. with my cup of coffee and at 4 p.m. before I leave, I check every ant store for any price changes, product changes, everything.
Yeah.
You have to. You have to know what everybody's doing all of the time, because otherwise you fall behind, don't you?
But how do you go out and pick a new species? I know Aesthetic, he has so many different species that he's getting in and out, and I've never heard of half of them. Are you just grabbing everything?
So if it's a new species I've never heard of, and there isn't many studies or white papers on them, you know, if the information's low online, I might bring in a couple. And try and see if I can keep them for 6 months first, and then I'll sell them. But I don't like doing that because the risk increases, and you need to be able to know something about a species to be able to keep them. But mainly my buying decisions is based on what I like, on what I think is cool. Maybe that's a wrong way to go about it. But if I think something's cool, I'll pull it in. And the reason why in the last, 13 months that we've got so many like different species that I would never have stocked before, like Tetrapenera and Harpignathos and things like that, because they might not be, and especially Polyrachis, they might not be my cup of tea, but Sam is simping over them all day. Jeez, that Sam will go crazy for any Polyrachis. So that's why we have so many in, because that's his personality. And he's looking at the sheets and saying, yeah, I want that and I want that. So it's definitely an emotional buying decision. It's not strategic in any way.
How do you find the species? You just talk with a seller and ask, do you keep this species, or do they send what they have?
Typically, they'll just tell you what they've got on that given week. And you'll order what you think you need, and then it'll all arrive different. You know, there'll be a big pile of tubes labeled Armata in the box, and they're not Armata at all. So you have to figure out what they are and how to care for them. But yeah, mainly it's just what they have on that given week, you know.
Oh yeah, I also do remember a funny Carabara story. You ordered some Carabara, if I'm not all wrong.
They were all Affinis. I ordered Diversa, and they all arrived Affinis. I said to the guy, I said, you know, you've sent me the wrong Carabara. And he's just like, you asked for Carabara, I send you Carabara. Okay, I'll sell them, but...
Yeah, it's definitely funny hearing all of this behind the scenes. We have another question from MCADW asking, how did Antarctic start, and what did you think when you initially started, and what did your family think when you started, and friends?
Oh, right, I see the question here. How did you start, and what... So, I've always been a bit of a wild card. When my first ever company was a vaping company, and it was before vaping was known, it was before it was popular, there was literally one online store in the UK at the time, no, maybe two, and I had this brainwave that I was going to open a retail shop, and it had never been done. Nowhere in Europe had vaping retail shops, nobody knew really that vaping existed. And I decided I was going to give it a go. And everybody told me not to. My family said, don't be so stupid. You can't invest that amount of money. You know, even my wife was like, no, you can't be doing that. You know, that's all the money we have. And I was like, trust me. So I took a risk, went with my hunch. And in our first month of opening the store, we did £15,000. And that turned into an entity that did like 800,000 in its first year. So when I said I really want to work with ants, nobody really questioned me. It didn't happen. I wanted to open an escape room. It was pretty crazy to open an escape room, but nobody questioned me. I'd never built anything in my life, and I built a room. So yeah, it's. I think people, if they fight me, I just do what I want to anyway. But I started because of the thing is, when I tell this story, the person that this relates to know that it relates to them. But I had an ant, and it didn't arrive the way I expected it to. And I felt that the ant wasn't loved like it should be. Maybe it's the vegan side in me. So I thought I could do this better, and I could treat this queen better than this, you know? I spent days and days excited for this queen. It took me weeks to decide to buy her. And that anticipation and that excitement and that thrill of waiting for this queen to arrive just felt like it de-escalated so quickly when she dropped on the letterbox. And I wanted to create something that was more special, that kind of like carried on that excitement. And even when times are hard now, and when I'm having a bad week or a bad day, I remind myself why I do this. And I do this because somebody out there has excitedly waited, decided on a queen, and they're waiting for her to arrive on their letterbox. And I like to think that I keep people excited. So yeah, that's how it started and how it reacted. Nobody really reacted. Like I said, I'm a bit of a wild card with my business decisions. So nobody really questioned it.
No, it's quite some story to have. I do really enjoy listening to all of this. I remember back when you started.
We haven't heard of anyone else.
Huh?
The problem is I chat on forever and nobody else gets to talk.
No. I mean, the thing is, it's supposed to be every second episode we have a guest on board, and every other episode we just chat. Just the crew itself, and you never quite know how chatty a guest will be. So there's nothing wrong here because I do enjoy just sitting down and listening. It is sad that we have Lynn and Ansi just sitting here as well, but I hope
listening to Rich.
we'll get on to Ansi shortly because he supplies me the bicarbonatum I need to exist.
Oh. You've got to
have a good colony from someone you trust, haven't you? You know, you've got to have a good supply, and he's the man. And his feeders are freaking awesome. I use them in all my displays.
Oh, the liquid feeders?
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, they're definitely not a bad design. I have started using them again. I had some bad luck with them first, but I just found out I misused them. So that's on me.
I just need him to create me one. In fact, Ansi, while you're here, can you create one that a Singularis can fit into?
Yeah, I should be able to. Yeah.
If you don't have the thing in the middle, they should be able to get down.
Oh yeah, I can just take.
Can take out the core. Yeah, it's just for like the little species that is.
What a goon! Why didn't I think of that?
Yeah. So for those who don't understand what we're talking about, Ansi Matters have developed this little cup with a little lid where the ants can go down into the cup and drink from the water. So, yeah, that's quite hard to imagine. Rich, I remember when you started, you had this whole pick a queen. Is that still something you're doing?
Oh, yeah, it still happens.
Oh, can you explain that thing?
Service. So, for a penny, because Wix doesn't let me do anything for free on the site, but for a penny, somebody can order a queen and they add that to their basket with the queen. And I send them three different queens in pictures. And they can choose the one they want. So usually, you know, you pick one that's dead on what they asked for, and then you put one with a cheeky bit of extra workers in and one with a cheeky bit of extra brood. And you like to see what people choose, and they pick their queens, so they're involved in the process and they feel like they've had a say. That service is extremely popular with collections. So people who collect directly from the store, they pre-buy a queen and they select pick the queen, and then we get them ready for them so when they arrive. So they sit down and they look through the queens that we've selected and pick it, you know, like face to face.
How many people do that?
Around about 30%, I'd say.
Wow. That's a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot of photos. So we've got like pre-saved messages that we send out to people saying the next three emails you're going to get are going to be pictures. You need to message us back with your order number and A, B, or C so that, you know, just try and limit the amount of confusion that can happen. And then the other thing, of course, we do is the hibernation service. So people can buy colonies from us but not receive them right away if they're in hibernation. And we'll keep them to the end of hibernation completely free of charge. And for a few pounds, we'll send you a picture of them every time we check on them. But not everyone has the means to hibernate their colonies. We also hibernate colonies for customers, but obviously you've got to bring them to us. And it's, locally people seem to do that, where we, you know, allow our incubators for customer colonies to hibernate if they can't do it in their own homes. And they usually fill up by the beginning of November. They're all gone. We've just got no space left.
I can't lie. I have said this before. I really enjoy just sitting here. There's so many things going into and antics. It's just crazy how many things here and there and all of these small bits and bobs. If there's anyone we did have, I think it was 28% said they wanted to start a shop in the future. Is there anything you want to say to them if they are thinking of just starting a basement cellar, bed cellar? Is there any tips and tricks?
Well, you've got nothing to lose, right?
Except money.
Yeah, money's just money. You can earn money back. As long as you're doing it for the right reasons, and you know you're going to bring something and make a difference. Everybody dreams of working with what they love, and if you can earn a little bit of money out of your hobby, or enough to pay for your hobby, or hey, they could turn out to be a massive, massive store. But unless you give it a go, you're never going to know. You know, I think we see a lot of people start. I couldn't even tell you how many ant shops have opened and closed since we came, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the one thing people don't realize is the amount of time it takes to feed all these colonies, to care for them, to learn about them. And you are going to get queens that don't make it, and you are going to get fertility issues every now and again. And like in your case, you are going to skip a quarantine thinking you'll wing it and things will go wrong.
What story is that about?
We'll wait and hear about that, won't we? But occasionally you're going to make mistakes. And the guts of a good store are the ones that don't give in when that happens. Just keep going. You know, there's going to be things that test you. And ultimately, in an industry where there's so many shops, it's going to get ugly. You're going to fight with other stores. You know, at the end of the day, you're all fighting for the same customers. And
yeah,
they're going to get upset with you, and you'll get upset with them, and people fall out. And it's just business. It's going to happen. But don't give in to it, you know? Just keep going.
Yeah, it is a very. There's a lot of stores competing for the
same
attention.
Customers. Yeah, we're all fighting for the same customers, and like me, I'm like, well, if there's a choice between bread on my table or that person's table, I'm picking me every time. You know, so what can I do to be the better one? You know, and anyone that tells you that they don't do this job not to earn money is lying. There's no reason anybody would start any form of business selling anything unless they wanted to earn money from doing what they love. So that's my favorite one is they're only in it for the money. Well, everyone that sells ants is in it for the money. But
yeah,
we can do it right, and we can do it well, and we can have a really good time earning the money.
Yeah, I mean, I know Antsimat is definitely in it for the money, right?
Oh yeah.
In fact, you might be the exception to the rule, Jake, because you've got a colony that you need to downsize. It's growing massive, and if that colony will fund your hobby in the process, fair play.
Yeah, it also like saves me quite a lot as well, because if I was to have to keep up with the expansion, you'd be talking like ridiculous amounts of money, if you get what I mean. So
yeah,
kind of, yeah, works both ways.
And it's a lush colony, isn't it?
Yeah, they're starting to fill out their new kind of... I had to put them out on a whole table the other day because it's the only thing that could fit them by now, so...
I had them all escape today.
They're not too bad at when they escape because they always come back.
They're trying to burrow into yellow crazy ant tubes. Crazy.
Maybe that's what happened to my yellow crazy ants.
Oh, it's insane. The new guy we got didn't put the cotton in tight enough, and of course they can get through it, can't they, by Carinatum? And I went in today and I pulled the yellow crazies out to fill an order, and the box was just full of Bicarinatum. Full of it. So before I could do anything this morning, I had to spend 2.5 hours picking up workers one by one into a barriered tub and fixing it.
Oh, at least they're quite sturdy little girls, so you don't end up squashing too many with the con.
Yeah, well, a soft little pinch with the fingers, you know, just a really soft grip, and you know they don't cause any trouble, do they?
That's funny. When you think about picking up an ant with your fingers, it sounds so weird. But especially after I started handling my Ada, I'm so used to picking them up with my fingers and just all my ants now. I can, yeah.
Well, we used to faff around all the time, but the spring steel tweezers are brilliant because they don't hurt the ants when you use them.
Exactly.
But you can also feel, can't you, and apply the exact amount of pressure you need to pick an ant up without causing it any harm. And it's so much more efficient. You know, you've got a Cinctelis or a Fusca running across your table, you know, or a Singularis. It's so much easier just to gently pick them up and put them where they need to be. Namely, because everyone steals my tweezers. I've got a really nice pair of tweezers that are like needle point. Oh, they're lovely. And everyone keeps nicking them.
I mean, I don't know how many tweezers I have. I have so many tweezers. And like, I never find them. It's so ridiculous. They're just all... I have like six of the deal tweezers or something, the aluminium ones. And I can only find one of them. Until I clean the room.
I think I send them to you every time I send you.
You do.
I throw you in a pair of tweezers.
And it's the only tweezers I actually use. And yet, somehow, I only have like three in my box of tweezers. All the others are just gone. They're inside the room, but yeah.
I feel your pain. I'm the same with cleaning hooks and syringes. It's you put something down and somebody else does a shift and it's gone. I'm like, who's been in my tub?
So, Rich, another question I just thought of. How many colonies do you stock? You say you get a shipment every 2 weeks or something, every week with around 100 to 200 ants. How many ants do you then stock at the moment?
Typically, at any one time right now, I'd say about 1,500 tubes of stuff. It's a lot more because we've just had a year's worth of Barbarous. So we've just literally filled an incubator with like... 800 Barbarous queens. I sent you a picture of them, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
When they arrived. So, yeah, we've got those. And, of course, the Nigers from... We're only, like, halfway through the year since we caught all those Nigers. So there's still, like, 800 or so of them left. So if you exclude them, we've probably got about 1,500 tubes of various things.
Yes. So what happened on Nuptial Flight? Did you just take... a week off to just catch ants, or how did it work?
Oh, for the Nigers?
Yeah.
No, well, I'm quite lucky. I live right by a nature reserve, and we get Flavus and Niger here, and Umbratus.
Oh,
so,
nice.
So I was really lucky. When Caris, she knows when they're going to fly. She's got this sixth sense, and she's like, I think they're going to fly today. And if she tells me they're flying, I race home, get out the little keyboard hoover, and I go for a little walk.
Yeah, that's a smart thing about also using hoovers for that.
I think
I saw just ants.
Floor, isn't it?
I think just ants at the Singapore store. They have a mini hoover, and then they put
it... an idea from. Yeah.
Yeah, they put it on the stick, and then they just go around the building sites and just go 5 meters up. Sucks like, the queen in and goes down.
Yeah, it's like freaking genius. I'm there on my hands and knees, and because it's always a hot day, and my back's aching, and my knees are gone, and I'm sweating everywhere. And this guy just walks around the streets with a hoover on a pole, and just...
Yeah,
so that's what I do now. And I don't even need to bend down, because when you've got enough queens, you just unscrew it and put them in the tub. It's brilliant.
So how much time do you reckon you spend on just catching flowers and nigers?
When they fly?
Yeah.
I usually have to catch two flights to catch enough, and Sam also does it as well wherever he is. So he'll pull in a few hundred as well. But yeah, maybe 16, 17 hours catching. And then you've got to make all the tubes and stuff, haven't you? That's the worst bit.
Yeah. It's just so different from a normal ant keeper. I remember every year I get 5 or 10 queens, and I'm like, but why? And then every time I look at them, I just want to catch them. But why? I don't need them.
Seeing
a queen, you just want to get it.
Yeah, and what if, because obviously I take so many queens, and I know they produce so many. But I've tried, you know, like walking, you know, so when I know they're flying, I'll walk half a mile into the reserve. Just collect from there, and I know it's not going to make a difference because they go up in the sky, but in my brain it does, you know. But yeah, you just clear an area, don't you, and then move on. And
Yeah, oh, but that's the thing. My fiance, she's like, oh, you can't just take them all. They not all of them. But there's established colonies all over the place. Trust me, they won't survive if I don't catch them. Because there's so many colonies.
Yeah, they're fully established and mature colonies everywhere.
Yeah. You know,
I'll find my calculation, but I actually looked into this. The chance of a queen after a nuptial flight getting to an established colony at 5 years old, you know, reaching maturity, and it was like 1 in 40 million. The odds of a single queen making it.
Wow.
It was absolutely amazing. I will find, I actually did look into it, and I will find, but the odds of a single queen making her first year was like 1 in 180,000 making it to 12 months old.
But it makes sense. It makes sense. There's so much competition and so many different things that can hurt you.
Yeah, it was honestly, the numbers were staggering on how few colonies actually make it to maturity.
Well, I mean, it's not surprising, it was just a crazy high number.
But then everywhere you look, there's Niger colonies, isn't there? So, you know, those colonies are not going to allow other ones to pop up within its territory.
No, and there's spider webs, and there's human, and there's cars, and there's birds, and all of these different insects that are eating the... There's so many enemies. And even the founding chamber. I mean, I've had so many queens that haven't gotten the first generation of workers. So many things can go wrong, so it makes sense.
Yeah, that's why they produce so many, isn't it?
Yeah. But I think we have...
It kind of makes you think twice about like digging one up and stuff like that, really. When it's like, so this queen is like 1 in 40 million sort of thing. Like, maybe you shouldn't dig her up. Like,
yeah, just leave her there. She's happy. Yeah, and you'd never get it anyway. If you were crazy enough to want to dig up a Niger nest, because you're that sadistic, you'd never get the queen.
No, she's
a meter underground somewhere. You know, you never get her. You'd purely be doing it. And I believe me, I tried. I tried my hardest. In the development opposite my house, they're building houses. So before the bulldozers go through, I was out in that field day and night for weeks trying to save as many colonies as I could. And I could save some rubra because there's so many queens and I know I couldn't get them all. But I saved some, you know. Flavus, again, you can't find the queens. They're too low. So after a couple of weeks, I just gave up trying. And sadly, they're going to meet their demise, aren't they, when the bulldozers roll in. But I did try. But it's impossible.
Yeah. That's where humans, they just, they're the final step in the chain. They'll just murder everything.
They make it. They just get to the point where they're having nuptial flights. Everything's sweet and rosy. Yeah. They dominate their landscape. And then some guy with an excavator comes trawling along to build a house. Poor things.
10 minutes later, their whole work is gone.
Oh, poor things.
That's the hard life of nature. But I want to say we have hit the end of this podcast. Now, Rich, can you just go through who are you and where can we find you if anyone wants to find you?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Richard. I'm from Antantics. You can see us at antantics.co.uk. And on the homepage towards the bottom, there's like a thing where you can find all of our links to YouTube, TikTok, Discord, Instagram, Facebook, everything. And of course, you can see antcon.co.uk if you're interested in the event, which is now sold out, but we may get more tickets in January.
Sold out?
Yeah.
So early.
All gone.
Damn. Have you announced it?
What, that it's sold out? No.
Yeah.
I guess I have now.
Oh, yeah, but this won't come out for a week, so.
Oh, there we are. Everyone will already know by then.
Wow. Damn, that's insane. Yeah.
Those people that got their tickets and took the hunch should feel pretty happy now, because the emails have already started coming in saying, please, can I come? And I'm like, we just don't have room, I'm sorry.
Now that's crazy, in a good way. But yeah, I want to say thank you all for joining, and also special thanks to Antimatters and Lynn, who are officially now backup hosters. So you will hopefully hear them once in a while, once if the other hosts are not attending. Next week it will be a lot more of a discussion, because we will talk about feeding animals. You can use cockroaches, mealworms, all of these different things. So that is what we're talking about next week, how to take care of feeder insects and what feeder insects are the best. Now, just a quick ask, Rich, what do you use as a feeder insect?
We use morios, mealworms, and crickets.
All right. Antimatters?
Dubia roaches or morio worms, really. Yeah.
And Lynn?
Usually roaches.
All right. Well, that is what we'll discuss next week. I'm also on Team Roach, but I think I've tried pretty much everything by now. But yeah, I want to say thank you all for listening. Be sure to share this with all of your ant-keeping friends and family. And you will hear more from us at the AntPod next week.